And what happened in the 70s is far worse now. So we need more Ruby Duncans, and this film can do that. It can push people, it just energize people to do what needs to be done.
Well, I want to thank both of you so much for joining us today. Best of luck to you. We'll post information about where people can watch the film. It's just opened on PBS stations nationwide. Thank you so much, Hazel and Sandra.
Thank you,
Thank
Samantha.
you. My guests have been Hazel Garland Pooler, director of Storming Caesar's Palace, based on Annalise Orlick's book, Storming Caesar's Palace: How Black Mothers Fought Their Own War on Poverty, and also Sandra Phillips Gilbert, Ruby Duncan's daughter, who's featured in the documentary alongside her mother and some of her siblings. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Gets Up. Like us on Facebook.com/RU with Sonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on Twitter.com/RU with Sonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
You're listening to the final days of KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2 special programming. You can hear the unique content produced by KBOO creators throughout February and March at kboo.fm/thrills. This Volume 2 special campaign ends on March 25th. Help us reach our goal of $17,000 by donating now. Go to kboo.fm/give or text the word KBOO to 44321. Thanks.
Did you know that KBOO is streaming live on the web? Well, you do now. Just type www.kboo.fm, click on Listen Live, and you've got us. Just another example of how KBOO 90.7 FM Portland works for you. It's your community radio.
Hey, yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You are tuned in to Civic Cypher.
One more game. A lot to stick around for today because there's a lot going on in the world today. And let me be the first to tell you, we need to help each other out. Let's put it like that. All right. So first up on the show, we are going to be talking about wokeness. As you may know, being woke is somehow under attack, or it's like a bad word as of late. And
they always find a way.
Isn't that crazy? But I always say, like, you know, it's wild because would you rather be asleep? You know, like just the language in and of itself is harmless. But you know, we're gonna peel back some layers there and redefine that for everybody so that you no longer have to be afraid of being woke. You understand a little bit of history there and you recognize the tactics that are being used, as always, to try to minimize or diminish efforts on the part of a progressive facet of this country, trying to move us more toward what we consider to be a racial utopia. We're also going to be talking about Bill 999 in Florida. So that means more Ron DeSantis, a.k.a. Donald Trump 2.0. A lot of nonsense, a lot of fear mongering, and a whole lot of misinformation. And as we know, people are susceptible to misinformation. So we're going to be talking about that as well, informing you best we can with respect to that. And we're going to dedicate our Way Black History fact to the late King Khalif Browder, because he's deserving of it, and you definitely need to know about that. But first and foremost, let's discuss some Ebony Excellence. Q, how do you feel about that?
Shall we?
We shall. So, Ebony Excellence this week is brought to you by Hip Hop Weekly Media, and I'm reading from Fenura. I believe that's how it's pronounced. We're going to celebrate the one and only Gail King. So without further ado, broadcast journalist Gail King, who is the co-host of CBS Mornings, recently accepted the 39th Walter Cronkite Award for Excellence in Journalism presented by Arizona State University's Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication. Full disclosure, Q and I are both in Arizona, and we have a distant relationship with that school, so we were very proud that they took the time to honor Gail King, a Black woman.
Well, not for Yetta Gibson, too, who indeed was a part of that process.
Yes, indeed, she was. Yeah, shout out Yetta. Anytime we get a chance to celebrate someone, especially in the space that we're in, we realize how difficult it is to work in journalism and media. So we wanted to take a moment. I'll keep reading. There's a quote. We are very excited to honor Gail with the 39th Walter Cronkite Award and celebrate her tremendous career. Cronkite School Dean Batino L. Batts Jr. said at the event. He goes on to say she has had a profound impact on the journalism industry and the communities across the nation that benefit from her excellence in reporting and storytelling. King is often recognized for her longtime friendship with media mogul Oprah Winfrey. The two women met when they were working at a local television station in Baltimore. King has worked as a reporter in Washington, D.C. and Kansas City, Missouri, before becoming a news anchor in Hartford, Connecticut. In addition to serving as co-host for CBS Mornings, King is also editor-at-large for Oprah Daily and hosts a live weekly radio show on Sirius XM, Gail King in the House. King's net worth, I don't know why that's here, is valued at $40 million, according to Celebrity Net Worth. So there you go. All right. Now, moving on. What's wrong with being woke? Now, I saw a video. I think we both saw this video this week. It was of a woman, you know, in some sort of show. The host was Black, a Black woman, and the guest was a white woman. And the guest said something like, well, you know, the radical left, because of their woke practices and blah, 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 their woke agenda, something like this, she said. And then the host says, well, what does woke mean to you? Define woke for me. And then the guest, the white woman, she started to kind of fumble over her words. And she's like, oh, God, this is going to be one of those moments that goes viral. And sure enough, it did, because, of course, we saw it. But again, she proceeded to fumble, you know, through her idea of what wokeness is, which I think illustrates, she's not the only person to fall victim of that. Many people, when they're asked to define what wokeness is, are either forced to explain that wokeness is kind of a person who is enlightened with respect to how folks are mistreated. This is a loose definition. We'll actually get to the real definition. And oftentimes that person wants to pursue a reality where people are treated more fairly. And so when people attack wokeness, people who attack wokeness are forced to identify it, then they're forced to kind of come face to face with the idea that they're on the wrong side of history, to be frank. And so not to pick on any one person, because we recognize that everyone is susceptible to.
And that is, however, not unique to woke or wokeness.
Oh, yeah.
Like words like socialism, words like critical race theory, words that the other side, if you will, uses in poor context to stoke the fear or hate or, you know, whatever their agenda is with their audience. And then their audience just adopts it. They don't do any research. They don't even seek to understand beyond that. And when faced with having to identify what it is, they either have to admit out loud that they have no idea, which happens way more than you would imagine, like, or they do know, and they have to, like you said, present the actual definition, not just to their audience, but to everyone that's listening, and reveal themselves on the wrong side of whatever argument that they're having.
It's such a crazy thing to see happen. These people flounder about, And the best ones are the ones when they do come to terms with the reality of it, and they have to try their best to try to make this beautiful sounding definition have some sort of sinister element to it. And it's not possible, because wokeness in truth is something that all people should aspire to. Now, granted, it is a slang term, and I won't keep you waiting. So let's go ahead and read the definition. Now, this is perfectly Googleable. In fact, I just copied and pasted in its entirety, because I do want to present both sides.
Googleable.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes. But I implore you to do the same, just so you know that we're not coloring anything here. Excuse me. This is a term used chiefly in the United States, and it is a slang term. Okay. Now, wokeness is defined as aware of and actively attentive to important societal facts and issues, especially issues of racial and social justice. So it's hard to suggest that being woke is sinister. In other words, to be the opposite of this is to be, frankly, a racist person. And that's why it's so difficult for these people to make it sound bad, because they're like, well, yeah, of course, I want that too.
It's only difficult to make it sound bad when they're talking to someone who stands opposed to it.
Exactly.
When they're speaking in an echo chamber,
no one's going to even question it.
Yeah,
the definition doesn't matter.
It's not even about the question.
Woke is in of itself a bad word in that space. So I'll read some of the examples of the language being used. But we will only succeed if we reject the growing pressure to retreat into cynicism and hopelessness. We have a moral obligation to stay woke, take a stand, and be active. Challenge injustices and racism in our communities, and fighting hatred and discrimination wherever it rises. That's from Barbara Lee. Here's another one. Argued that Brad Pitt is not only woke, but the wokest man in Hollywood, because he uses his status and his production company, Plan B, to create space for artists of color with such films as 12 Years a Slave, Selma, and the upcoming film Moonlight. This comes from Giselle DeFarge. All right, and here's another one. Being woke to gender discrimination is difficult. It ruins things you love. Entire canons of art are rotten to the core with it. It's from Rachel Edelstein. And I think that's where we're going to stop with this one. Now, being woke is something that also is not new. It's something that has been around since at least the civil rights movement. The idea being exactly what it sounds like. There's a bunch of, you know how you hear the word sheeple all the time?
Mm-hmm.
I'll make up this word right now, but there's a bunch of sleeple everywhere, right? People who accept the status quo, people who just say, hey, that's the way the world is, or people that, you know, these are the people that we get the most often. You know, change is slow. You can't have everything overnight. Why are you protesting? Why are you, you know, demanding to be heard and insisting that we respect your rights in this moment, right? Those would be categorized in this thought experiment as the sleeple, right? And it's the people who are woke that recognize that it's not only possible, it helps everybody, and there's an idea of how to get there expeditiously, you know, with some intentionality. People who have done research, people who have the insight that most folks don't have, that would fall under the category of being woke. That coupled with some conviction in their hearts and a moral compass that points them in the positive direction would certainly qualify folks as being woke, right? This applies to Black people, this applies to white people, this applies to anybody who checks these boxes. And it's not until, in my belief, we see folks like AOC and Ilhan Omar get elected to public office and get a lot of attention for really challenging the status quo, and being champions of wokeness in those more visible spaces, that the term starts to get co-opted by the right and associated with people that they hate. The concept, the idea of it is hater proof. But if you can align it with someone that you don't like, then people can buy into it. And then you start to see the idea behind it shift.
Yeah, they either veil it in poor context or they speak directly to people who feel how they feel, mm-hmm. right? So they kind of turn into a two-edged sword. I can veil it in poor context and I'm a good enough speaker, I'm a good enough salesperson that I can convince people that it's bad, the word bad in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And then every argument that I make where I use it, I deliver it in that way intentionally, and I get the response that I want from people who wouldn't even take the time to use Google. Mm. And or I'm speaking to people who feel exactly how I feel,
right?
And they celebrate me for it. So
yeah,
they've done a very brilliant job of co-opting it. And we've talked about this on recent episodes. Someone who we once believed an ally assist in that co-opting, you know, a gentleman with a very popular TV show on HBO. I won't say his name because I don't want to use my platform to uplift his, but my co-host and brother knows who I'm talking about. Mm-hmm.
I know who you're talking about. And the fact that you don't want to say his name makes me not want to say his name.
No, I'm not going to say his name.
Okay.
Just using him as an example of another person who I don't believe is ignorant to what woke actually means, but he has started to show some true colors in light of, I think, himself, like many supporters of the right, not defending the right, not defending the right wing politician, not defending, you know, our former president, but defending themselves, right? They start to look around and realize, oh my God, the things that are being attacked are kind of some of the things that I feel. It's kind of some of the things that I think. And I'm not bad. So then our former president couldn't be that bad. And maybe all of these people aren't that bad.
You know what really bugs me? Because you're absolutely right. What bugs me, though, is that people think of things often enough, to your point, as good or bad, right or wrong, as opposed to a spectrum and being fluid, right? In other words, once upon a time, when I was 6 years old, 5 years old, I did some things that I didn't know were wrong. This was back when the Ninja Turtles first came out. Okay? And there was these Ninja Turtle coloring books that they had.
Turtles was cracking.
Listen. And there were so many Ninja Turtle coloring books. And I was just thinking, like, well, if there's this many Ninja Turtle coloring books, then they have to have some for me. Just makes perfect sense. Why would they have this many? So I took a Ninja Turtle coloring book. Just made sense. And it wasn't until I got a little older that I realized, yo, that was stealing. I didn't ask for that. That was jack move, son. Yanked them. And the wild thing about it is that in that moment, I wouldn't have known better. But looking back on it, I could see, like, yeah, that was the wrong thing to do. And I don't look at myself as a bad person, you know. Now, older Ramses, a person who's a grown man that has kind of fleshed out the fullness of the world and the experiences that life holds, I got a little bit more to work with. But rarely do I look at things as bad or good or right or wrong. Instead, you know, as I mentioned, there's kind of a morality. What feels like the highest good in this moment, based on everything that I know? Am I open to receiving alternative perspectives? Is my goal as a human being to put goodness into the world? Or is my goal to get as much as I can for my own benefit or the benefit of, you know, the people that are immediately around me. You know what I mean? How far do I want my goodness to radiate? These are really foundational ideas that I have to discuss in my own internal monologue and arrive at conclusions in terms of who it is that I want to be. And some things it makes perfect sense. Look, I gotta do my thing first. And some things it's like, listen, I don't really stand to benefit from this thing as much as other people do. And if I can help, then I will help. Often, I mean, you know the story full well. In fact, behind you in the studio here, we have some of our some of the things that celebrated, some of the publications that celebrated us for all the charity work we've done. We don't like talking about it because who talks about the charity work we've done, but at the same time, we kind of have to because we had a lot of volunteers and that was the name of the game. But I don't think either one of us had the intention of going out there to feed homeless people so we can be celebrated and beat them. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, let's...
Quite ironically, though, very loudly accused of that.
Yeah, that's right. You're right.
Remember, I didn't want us to start a 501c3. I did not want us to start an organization.
We need to be
I wanted this to just be us doing something.
Yeah, I remember.
Right? And for us to do that with the amount of reach that we eventually did, we needed to take those steps. But I wanted to remove us from it because very early on, that was like accusation one. These dudes are doing this so that they can look good. Right. Right? Because we used social media to promote what we were doing, which... more than quadrupled and quintupled or 10 times the amount of people that came out and were able to give back and have an impact. There were people who would jump on Facebook and Twitter or whatever the popular social media platform was at the time and accuse us of doing exactly that.
Yeah.
These dudes are just doing that so that they can look good. And I used to always make the argument, so what? It's still the same outcome, maybe a better outcome because we're quote unquote making ourselves look good. So I just
I know that. I know the frustration. I remember I went through it with you, of course. But yeah, I think that is kind of one of the things that, you know, folks need to really understand about themselves before deciding what ultimately good and bad and right and wrong means to them, because there are a lot of people who deserve equal treatment. And if you were to come to terms with the question, I believe it's Jane Elliott is the one that asked this, if you're a non-Black person, if you would feel comfortable being treated the way Black people are treated in this country, please stand up. She asked the question twice. She says, I don't think you heard me. If you, non-Black people, would wake up tomorrow and be happy to be treated by the criminal justice system, by the education system, by the, you know, on and on and on, banking system, healthcare system, you would be happy to be treated the way Black people are treated in this country, please stand up. So I ask you, our listener, if this is kind of how you feel, or if you know people in your world where you can ask a question like that, it shows that they know that there's a different reality for us, all of us. And for you to decide often enough from a place of privilege, a place of advantage, what is good and bad or right and wrong, it often is going to reflect your version of reality and very much keep yourself insulated from that. And I will make that live for you a bit, because now secondary definition, very much a secondary definition of wokeness is effectively disapproving. You'll see that also under the same definition. So I'll read the definition beyond disapproving. Politically liberal, as in matters of racial and social justice, especially in a way that is considered unreasonable or extreme. So this is the newest version of the definition not the primary definition, but very much a secondary. I want to make that very clear if I haven't done so yet. But it basically means argumentative, combative, people that cause you to feel uncomfortable by pointing out that, you know, in matters of racial and social justice, that, you know, your version of reality needs to change. And often the pushback is that these people are unreasonable. And again, that's a very easy claim to make when your children aren't getting gunned down on video. It's a very easy claim to make when healthcare outcomes are more beneficial for you. A very easy claim to make when you're not losing wealth, rather the opposite of true. You're gaining wealth, your people, your, you know, and you know, that list goes on. You know, it's not just the criminal justice, education, there's employment, there's, you know, there's historical documented governmental efforts, plural, in this country. You know, that's, it's very easy to say when you're not combating environmental racism, where your communities aren't being polluted needlessly. It's very easy to say that these people are being extreme and their wokeness is unreasonable. And so I say there's nothing wrong with being woke. It's way better than being asleep. You know, you don't want to be one of the sleeple. I'm running with that word now.
Go for it, bro.
And here's a great example of what people will pick apart. You know what I mean? So James Bond's books are kind of being rewritten to reflect modern sensitivities. And people on the right hate this. They say James Bond is not supposed to be politically correct. He's James Bond, right? So the books are being rewritten to account for the world we live in. Well, once upon a time, Black people used to be called Negroes, until it fell out of fashion due to cultural pressures and influences. And now it is looked unfavorably upon calling Black people Negroes. You know, we decided that we would be called Black or African American. And this is where we are now. So to call someone a Negro, especially like in the government documents or on the news or anything like that in a public space, is frowned upon. And it's because of this same type of momentum from people who would be considered woke. Things change, such is the way of all things.
And now, proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
For those of you just tuning into Civic Cypher, I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You are once again tuned in to Civic Cypher.
Yeah. A lot more for you to stick around for. Back to talking about what's the name now? You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, sadly I do.
Mr. Ron DeSantis. We're going to be talking about Bill 9099, Florida State House bill, that is problematic.
That's a way to put it.
Yeah, we're going to definitely talk about that. And then it occurred to me that Kalief Browder is a person that we needed to talk about on the show. So we're going to spend some time talking about him. Please brace for impact, because that is a heavy story with an advanced trigger warning for you. But first and foremost, let us discuss BABA, Becoming a Better Ally, BABA. So today's BABA is sponsored by Major Threads, for the finest in men's sportswear. Check majorthreads.com. And today we'll be reading from the New York Times. As you know, those of you who listen to the show, you may have heard the name Brian Stevenson. We're big fans of Brian Stevenson around here. He is a lawyer and a great orator, and a person who really inspires us. He's also the director for the National Memorial for Peace and Justice and the leader of the Equal Justice Initiative. So I'll read. Montgomery, Alabama. The National Memorial for Peace and Justice, on a 6-acre site overlooking the Alabama State Capitol, is dedicated to the victims of American white supremacy, and it demands a reckoning with one of the nation's least recognized atrocities, the lynching of thousands of black people in a decades-long campaign of racist terror. At the center is a grim cloister, a walkway with 800 weathered steel columns all hanging from a roof. Etched on each column is the name of an American county and the people who were lynched there. Most listed by name, many simply as unknown. The columns meet you first at eye level, like the headstones that lynching victims were rarely given. But as you walk, the floor steadily descends. By the end, the columns are all dangling above, leaving you in the position of the callous spectators in the old photographs of public lynchings. There's nothing like it in the country, which is the point. They have cataloged nearly 4,400 in total lynchings. Quote, just seeing the names of all these people, said Brian Stevenson, the founder of the Equal Justice Initiative, the nonprofit organization behind the memorial. Many of them, he said, quote, have never been named in public. We want you to check out museumandmemorial.eji.org, learn about that, and become a better ally. All right. Florida State House Bill 999. So as you know, and as we've discussed on the show, it's some people out there that they don't want us to know about history. And
when that's where it starts.
That's where it starts. And before we actually get into this, I think we got a clip to play, right? Let's fire that one up.
Hi, Grace. I am Grace Lynn. I am 100 years young. I'm here to protest our school's district book banning policy. My husband, Robert Nickel, was killed in action in World War II. At a very young age, he was only 26, defending our democracy, constitution, and freedoms. One of the freedoms that the Nazis crushed was the freedom to read the books they banned. They stopped the free press, banned and burned books. The freedom to read, which is protected by the First Amendment, is our essential right and duty of our democracy. Even so, it is continually under attack by both the public and private groups who think they hold the truth. In response to the book banning throughout our country and Martin County, last year, during the time I was 99, I have created this quilt. To remind all of us that these few of so many more books that are banned or targeted need to be proudly displayed and protected, and read if you choose to. The quilt was shown on national TV as part of Ali Velshi's Banned Book Club segment. Banned books and burning books are the same. Both are done for the same reason: fear of knowledge. Fear is not freedom. Fear is not liberty. Fear is control. My husband died as a father of freedom. I am a mother of liberty. Banned books need to be proudly displayed and protected from school boards like this. Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. So, yeah. Book bannings. You heard it straight from the horse's mouth. The person 100 years old that lived through book bannings that we were made aware of in this country, taking place in Nazi Germany. Take control over the children and their minds. Do not have them think beyond these borders. It'll be easier to indoctrinate them if they only have one perspective rather than multiple perspectives. We've long since known that conservatives in this country often their numbers are weakened as a result of higher education. The more, in other words, the more educated you become, the more liberal a philosophy you adopt, the more liberal your voting tends to be. You tend to see the world with more empathy and more understanding because you've expanded your cognitive boundaries and you recognize that certain things are possible. There's less to be afraid of. We have more in common, etc. You do not notice folks who have a liberal philosophy trying to hide education.
And I don't know if that's, excuse me, people that are more educated or people that are more enlightened, right? Because Governor DeSantis has a degree from Harvard Law School. Mm-hmm. So very educated. Still hyper right wing conservative, still very, very selfish and bigoted and racist. Mm. So
that's a good point.
Not just the idea of more education by way of school, but more enlightened people tend to be, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. more caring, more empathetic, more inclusive. Yeah.
And that's a good point because education does not completely eradicate conservatism. There are people who are just conservatives. And that is the way that they world that they see the world, and that's okay. Unfortunate.
I mean, not really.
I'm just being
right
because
conservative.
I'm being funny.
Conservative throughout history has meant many different things.
Yeah, it's not.
I don't even like to call present day Republicans versus conservative.
Yeah,
I think it's too light a term. It's too benign and too vague.
Yeah,
our current right wing extreme GOP
is
the new MAGA country.
Anime.
Those are different people, man.
I'm just being funny. As you know, and as many of our listeners, I'm like kind of bleeding heart liberal with mine. And a lot of times, the conservative folks that I engage with tend to look at that like that's a weakness of some sort. And I have a real problem with that because I believe it's a superpower.
Yeah, they've been taught that. You use the word indoctrinated. There's a reason why.
Yeah, well... Read as many books as I have and then talk to me. Anyway, back to the books, funnily enough. So this is kind of where we are, right? There are people that do become educated and they just have conservative beliefs. And again, that is okay. There's nothing wrong with that. However, overwhelmingly, folks that tend to be more educated, tend to find themselves with more liberal beliefs and tend to vote more more liberal.
Maybe think more liberal. I don't know if they vote more liberal.
This is what I've been exposed to, you know, that's so maybe overwhelming is not the right word, but there definitely tends to be a bias.
Because I think there's a bunch of very educated people that feel differently even than they vote because of personal best interest, because of fiscal outcomes, and a bunch of other reasons.
Perhaps.
Upon a time anyway. Today it's a lot more straightforward, something else.
Well, here's what I'll do. I will recheck that because I would not speak with such authority on that particular matter if I had not read it from what I believe to be a credible source. Mm-hmm. So I'll double check that. But for now, what I'm saying is based on the premise that education tends to yield more liberal voters, more liberal people. Indeed.
And I'm not challenging both parts of that. I think it does yield more liberal people. You use the word voters.
Well, this is the reason why the GOP would be concerned about that and adopt these really hard-nosed postures with respect to education. So with that in mind, I'm reading from CBS News. Florida State House Bill 999 was advanced this week. And the bill would ban state colleges and universities from using funds to, I'll read the quote here. It says, quote, promote, support, or maintain any programs or campus activities that espouse diversity, equity, or inclusion, or critical race theory rhetoric. This means your Mecha, your Black Student Union, your Asian American Students Club,
your National Panhellenic Fraternities and Sororities.
There you go. The bill would also give the state's Board of Governors the ability to remove, quote, any major or minor that is based on or otherwise utilizes pedagogical, just a new word for me, methodology associated with critical theory. The bill HB 999 was passed by the House on Monday, and the Florida State Senate must now pass its version of the bill SB 266 before it is able to head to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis's desk. Okay. Opponents of the bill worry that its language is too vague and could be used to ban activities promoted by multicultural student unions, Black fraternities and sororities, and courses in Jewish history, women's studies, and LGBTQ plus studies. An official analysis of the bill cited examples of current courses that would be banned under the proposed legislation, including Florida Atlantic University's Gender and Climate Change and Florida University's Social Inequities, Social Construction of Difference Inequities. Okay. Now, it actually goes further than this, because this bill allows the governor effectively to create a panel of deciders who get to decide on tenured teachers whether or not they'll continue to be able to teach. Right. If they have a problematic history of teachings on, you know, right on the edge of that line, or.
And problematic is an interesting word to use.
Right. And it's
in this context, it just means teaching diversity, inclusion.
Right.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion. Like,
what are our strengths? How do we best get along with each other?
Oh, wow.
What are our values? What perspective can we bring? What can we learn from each other? These sorts of things. Well, basically, this gives. Ultimately, all authority to Ron DeSantis, the governor of the state of Florida. This man wants to be president, by the way. So he gets
this
to
man will run for president, by the way.
He gets to decide who the deciders are. And of course, as you know, if you're the one deciding who the deciders are, you're effectively the decider, right? And then they get to decide if you can teach. Carte blanche.
And this isn't people who want to be teachers.
These are all tenured
teachers.
Exactly. And here's another piece that is interesting. This comes directly from the language, the Senate bill language. They want to focus their historical studies on Western European studies and civilizations. In other words, you want to say it for me?
No, I don't, because I'm...
So I'll say it, white people. In other words, they are centering the history of white people at the expense of everybody who was not born white. Now, does that sound like, hey, this is a white country? Does that sound like, hey, this is America, speak English? Now that you've lost your, you know, German language and your Irish, you know, history and, you know, all the, you know, all the immigrants that came. Doesn't that sound like white supremacy? The reason it sounds like it, because I know it does, is because it is, right? The thing is, crafted in this language and under the guise of protecting children from feeling ashamed about themselves, these folks can get away with this. Not to mention that this is a playbook straight out of Nazi Germany. And they're not the only ones to do it, but we see oppressive regimes ethnostates, people that really try to prop up one facet of their citizenship and make all the other second class citizens to kind of serve that elite base. This is exactly the playbook. And it might sound good to people who are susceptible to fear mongering. But the fact is that looking at it for what it is very hurtful. And it's very obvious. And because this man has that level of authority in that state, and, you know, he has the support of, you know, I believe it's both houses in his state, the Senate and the House of Representatives in the state of Florida. They're both primarily conservative, or have a conservative majority. This will actually be the law, crafted as is, and everybody who's not white suffers, whether you know it or not.
Some white people will suffer too.
Yeah.
And they do know it. They just...
You know, when I went to Africa, I went to Egypt, which is in Africa. And I saw exactly how much history is there and how far back it goes. You know, this country is 400 some years old. They have so much stuff there. And 400 years ago, they're like, this is the baby stuff. We got stuff that's 4,000 years old. We got stuff that's 40,000 years old. Like, that's, you know. So I learned about all this stuff here and none of this stuff there. And when I got there, I realized, man, I'm at a loss. I'm learning things that I didn't know. I'm realizing the genius of these people, you know. And it's not just there. I've been to France. I've been to Switzerland. I've been a lot of places around the world. You know, we both have. And the history is so deep, but we, and you might know this about us, we in the United States, we're so focused on us that it's kind of like rude. We're kind of a self-centered country.
Arrogance is the word you're looking
Arrogant,
for.
Arrogant, yeah, definitely. And I think that it's, ultimately, it is to our own detriment. We live in this small little piece of the world where everything is, we think everything is safe. We're afraid to travel, afraid to expand our boundaries. And there's a lot of people happy to just allow us to live our lives in a very small way, insignificant way. Because again, the more we know, the more we expand our boundaries, the more we understand that we're all basically the same. When I was in Southeast Asia for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, bouncing around from Singapore to Malaysia to Vietnam to Hong Kong to all of them, you know, Indonesia, I learned something that seemed very simple, but it was very profound for me. Every time I ended up on a new piece of dirt, I saw people there who were using what grew out of the ground to put some food together or make some money so that they could feed their babies because they love their children. And I'm like, man, if that ain't the most human thing that I've ever seen, and here I am on the other side of the world, it's dark, it's night, it's 4 a.m. where I live. Over here, the sun is shining, these people is working, happy, laughing, listening to music, dancing, kissing each other, loving each other, deserving of whatever life could hold for them. They don't live under the stars and stripes, ain't no guns in the country, you know what I'm saying? Happy as they want to be. They go up, hike a mountain, drop off a little bit of incense at a Buddha, say a prayer for their, you know, passed away loved ones, hike back down the mountain, keep it pushing. That grew me up a lot, seeing that. Beautiful. And the sad part about it is most of the people that I know in the United States never will have that eye-opening moment where they like get to see that and recognize like, yo, these people are just like me. So it was so much easier to see like, these are my brothers and my sisters over here doing their thing. I'm happy to support. I know what that's like. If you're up here crying and praying because you have a sick grandmother, I know what that's like. My grandma was sick too. You love your grandma too? You doing your best for her? I respect you. I know what that, I've been there. You know what I'm saying? And now we don't speak the same language, but.
Yeah, we, the kind of curse of having traveled the world is learning exactly what you just said. And this is very, very common information. We're not breaking new ground here. We have far more in common with our brothers and sisters in the human race all over this planet than the things that divide us. There's just so many people that stand to benefit and profit, or actually not even so many people. There are just powerful people that profit and benefit from the things that divide us, that they spend a lot of resources making sure they highlight those things and keep us from uniting, because the haves love that there are so many have-nots. It gives them a much bigger pie to split between each other.
It's heavy. Well, the best I can say is stay woke. You know, stop being afraid. Know what it is that we're dealing with. You know, like everything that you're likely afraid of, somebody wants you to be afraid of it. Now, that's not to say that that's a conservative thing or a liberal thing. That's just a thing. But there's far less to be afraid of than you may know. And education is the last thing anybody should be afraid of. So, yeah, stay woke. And if this dude does run for president, which, you know, it's pretty much a sure thing, do everything that you can to keep this man from getting power, because we've seen what he'll do. All right, it's time for the Way Black History Fact. And today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by the Black Information Network Daily Podcast. And I will be reading from Wikipedia. In other words, you can check this out for yourself. There is mention of suicide in this story. And so, fair warning. So I will read. Kalief Browder was born May 25th, 1993, and he lived until June 6th, 2015. He was an African-American youth from Bronx, New York. He was held at the Rikers Island Jail Complex without trial between 2010 and 2013 for allegedly stealing a backpack containing valuables. During his imprisonment, Browder was in solitary confinement for 700 days. Also need to let you know that if you do want to read this or read along, I'm skipping around, just had to condense it a bit here for the show. All right. On May 15, 2010, police apprehended Browder and a friend on Arthur Avenue near East 186th Street in the Belmont section of the Bronx. Browder said he was going home from a party. He thought the police were carrying out a routine stop and frisk, a police procedure he had undergone on a number of occasions. Police officers were responding to a 911 call placed by Roberto Bautista about the theft of a backpack containing a camera, $700, a credit card, and an iPod Touch. Bautista said, two male black guys, they took my brother's book bag. Browder told the attending police officers, I didn't rob anyone, you can check my pockets. The police searched Browder, but they did not find the backpack. 17 hours after the arrest, Browder was interrogated by a police officer and a prosecutor. The following day, Browder was charged with robbery, grand larceny, and assault. Because he was on probation, Browder was not released. At his arraignment, he was charged with second-degree robbery, and bail was set at $3,000 with a bail bondsman. The amount needed was $900. Browder's family could not raise this amount. Browder was jailed at the Robert N. Davereen Center. And I want to make it known that his prior arrest, he also claimed that he was innocent for that arrest too. Okay. Browder was jailed at the Robert N. Davereen Center on Rikers Island. Preet Bharara, the United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York, said that the RNDC had a deep-seated culture of violence in which inmates suffered broken jaws, broken orbital bones, broken noses, long bone fractures, and lacerations requiring stitches. Browder said inmates washed their own clothes with soap and a metal bucket, causing rust stains on the clothes. Browder's mother began visiting him weekly and provided him with clean clothes and snack money to avoid becoming a target of the inmates. He slept on the top of his belongings, including his bucket. Browder said he felt pressure to gain physical strength and to defend himself from carceral violence. He said, quote, "Every here and there, I did a couple of pull-ups or push-ups. When I went in there, that's when I decided I wanted to get big." Browder was a victim of carceral violence. On one occasion, he and other inmates were lined up against the wall. Correction officers wanted to find the instigator of the fight. Browder and the inmates were punched one by one. He said their noses were leaking, their faces were bloody, their eyes were swollen. The guards threatened the inmates with solitary confinement if they reported their injuries. On December 10th, 2010, a potential trial date was set after prosecution and defense had submitted notices of readiness. On January 28th, 2011, 258 days after his arrest, Browder appeared in court. The prosecution requested a deferment of proceedings. On June 23rd, 2011, Browder's record showed the people not ready request 1 week. August 24, 2011, the people not ready request 1 day. November 4, 2011, the people not ready prosecutor on trial request 2 weeks. And December 2nd, 2011, prosecutor on trial request January 3rd, 2012. On June 29th, 2012, Browder's record showed the people not ready request 1 week, September 28, 2012. The people not ready request 2 weeks, November 2nd, 2012. The people not ready request 1 week, December 14, 2012. The people not ready request 1 week. After 961 days in Rikers, Browder had appeared before eight judges. He later opined, "These guys are just playing with my case." March 13, 2013, Browder appeared before Bronx Judge Patricia Domingo. She offered Browder a plea bargain of immediate release for his admission of guilt on two misdemeanors with consideration of time already served. Browder refused the offer and was returned to Rikers. On May 29, 2013, Domingo freed Browder in anticipation of the dismissal of the charges against him 1 week hence. Bautista had returned to Mexico and could not give testimony against Browder. While incarcerated in 2010, Browder made his first suicide attempt. He tried a second time on February 8, 2012, trying to hang himself using strips of sheet tied to a ceiling light in the cell. Browder later said the COs goaded him to commit suicide. On another occasion, after an appearance before a judge, Browder made sharp implement from the bucket in his cell and started to slit his wrists. An officer intervened. After his release, Browder continued to have symptoms of depression, he said. "People tell me because I have this case against the city, I'm all right, but I'm not all right. I'm messed up. I know that I might see some money from the case, but that's not going to help me mentally. I'm mentally scarred right now. That's how I feel. There are certain things that changed about me. They might not change back. Before I went to jail, I didn't know about a lot of stuff. And now that I'm aware and paranoid, I feel like I was robbed of my happiness." In November 2013, Browder made another suicide attempt and was admitted to the psychiatric ward of St. Barnabas Hospital, the first of three admissions to the ward. On June 6, 2015, at 12:15 p.m., Browder hanged himself from an air conditioning unit outside his bedroom window at his mother's home. His mother discovered his body. And that was the story of Anthony Browder. Sorry.
There's so many things about his story that are messed up, and so many things about his story that are not singular to him. And yeah, that sucks, man. The criminal justice system in this country being privately controlled and for profit is a really, really, really messed up thing that does not get the attention or outrage that it deserves. Because you're listening to that story of this kid accused of something, no evidence found to even suggest that he did it, and we're just going to throw him in jail anyway.
And that decision being made by someone else, as he said, robbed him not just his happiness, but his innocence of thought, his blissful ignorance, if you will. And it is really sad that, again, that's not just his story. It's just the one that we told today.
What a trip, man. Our Way Black History Facts usually go way black, but way back. But this one was more recent, but it is definitely Black history. We will always remember his name among the ancestors. But that is going to do it for us here on Civic Cypher. So once again, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
Yes, and I am Q Ward. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Go to our website, share our links with your friends, donate if you can. But if you can't, like I said, like, subscribe, comment. The engagement helps. Telling your friends about our show helps. Sharing what we're doing with people who are not following us, who are not tuned in, helps. So anything that you can do to support helps. This is a labor of love for us. We appreciate you guys. CivicCypher.com, Civic Cypher on all social media. Ramses Ja on all social media. I am Q Ward, just on a couple of those social media things, because I can't really handle all of them. But we love and appreciate you guys, man. So you got anything else for the people, Ram?
No, man, I think you set it up.
All right, I guess that's it, y'all. See y'all next week. Peace. You like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders. With press passes, we bring it to you as it happens. The streets love my crew for music and rapping. Street commander slash beat expander. Here to fight the slander with the proper propaganda. What's happening? You got a question, then ask it. The news is just a TV show. Get past it. And this from a quiet wartime journalist. Headlines, wake up, refuse, and resist. KBOO Portland.
These are the final days of KBOO's Volume 2 All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign, wrapping up with a full day of live music. Saturday, March 25th, KBOO's annual Bluegrass Marathon will be held.